Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County, not just wine country, but farm country and growing country. And we're growing all kinds of things, new businesses, things you can eat everywhere. Today, I have two very special guests, Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser. I wanted to say your names so that I did it correctly from the get-go, right? I like to practice. And you have a new company called Avalo. Welcome to At the Table.
Hi there.
Hi, thanks.
All right, so this whole process is a little new for you, and I know radio is a little new for you. So let's be basic. Where did you come from, each of you? Well, no, tell us what Avalo really is.
Absolutely. Avalo is a subscription service to bring home gardens to people and to help them grow food in their own yards.
So in other words, instead of bringing us a box of harvested produce, you're bringing the box to grow itself in their yard.
Absolutely.
Front or back?
Preferably both, but...
and on the side, huh?
Absolutely.
So how does it work, Amanda?
Okay, so it is a subscription service, to Jeremy's point. So what we do is we will have a consultation with our clients to survey their property, to see the best lighting for their veggies. And then we will come in and we'll deliver the beds, we'll install them. That means we put in everything from the frame to the dirt to the plants, get everything situated, and then we maintain them. So right now, we are currently maintaining them about twice a week with our rainy season. And then during the summertime, it'll be upwards of about three times a week. And then with those heat waves, it might even be more.
All right. Well, this sounds really appetizing. Jeremy, when we talk about the box, describe the box. I mean, this is pretty basic garden farming, right?
It is. It's exactly it. It's really about getting you the most production out of a specific 4x6 box, which is our standard size.
Right.
We took a little twist. Being Sonoma County, we know that water conservation and being kind to the environment are very, very important things to be. And so we built in technology that takes care of watering and is the most drought-friendly way to grow vegetables.
Technology. You know, immediately I think of a smartphone. You know what I mean? And, right? Or some little tiny animal with little pulleys and whatnot. What do you mean by technology?
Well, we actually went old school for technology. So what we did, we actually used sub-irrigation technology. So there's a water reservoir in the bottom of each of our beds. And so the plants actually control how much they drink. So you can't overwater, you can't underwater. You end up with less pests. You end up with fewer plant issues. It's a really great way to grow.
Wait, I'm thinking that you're talking about dry farming.
It's very, very close.
It's the love child of dry farming and hydroponics, right? You have water underneath, and you keep the crust of the earth intact, so nothing escapes, and you let the plants do. Let's see what they do, right?
Absolutely, the plants are way smarter than we are.
How wonderful! I mean, have you been calling it dry farming in a box?
We will now.
All right, because I'm totally trademarking that. That's wonderful. All right, so, and what kind of dirt, Amanda? What kind of dirt?
Absolutely. So we have tested quite a few soils. We are firm believers in working with local partners.
Yep.
Absolutely. We want everything to be as fresh and local as possible. So we're actually working with a group out of... I guess they're considered Santa Rosa, but it feels more to be, I don't know, super outskirts of Santa Rosa.
Let me tell you something. Santa Rosa is a very big place. Santa Rosa is much more than downtown Santa Rosa. It's a huge place, and it covers a lot of different topography. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And I think it's good for people to know that Sonoma County has this big place called Santa Rosa that does a lot of stuff. If you ever have been to Paradise Ridge Winery, you go up there in the midst of these incredible physical art installations, these sculptures in the middle of the woods, in the middle of the field, and you overlook this community, and you realize, oh my goodness, one place called a city is a city, is a town, is semi-ag, is ex-urban, is, you know what I mean, is someplace where apparently you get dirt.
Absolutely. And our the one that the dirt that we prefer for the raised beds is actually what they call the Sonoma County organic mix. So
can I tell you how much that pleases me? I mean, I love the way you very carefully and systematically got up to Sonoma County organic mix. Yeah. I mean, yeah, in other words, our dirt.
It is.
Yeah, you know, Luther Burbank talked about Sonoma County and particularly Santa Rosa as the Eden of all the earth, right? Yeah. That we have it all here. And if you've ever been to the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, that 80 acres is a bio hotspot, one of 8 or 10 in the whole world, where there's so much living and growing there that's dynamic that I believe the term is it's goofy. So that, all right, so you fill, all right, so you've got dry farming in a box. Yep. You have the dirt from Santa Rosa, right?
Yep.
And you said veggies, so no fruit?
We do not technically do fruit. However, there's always a however. And we do customize, of course, for each and every client. You know, everyone has their own special likes, dislikes, dietary restrictions. So we do have a blueberry bush or two.
All right, and let's be honest, folks, tomatoes are fruit.
That's true.
They have only been reclassified, you know, because somebody named Hunt or Ronald Reagan said that ketchup was a vegetable. I don't, you know what I mean? It doesn't count. You obviously plant tomatoes, right?
Absolutely. Sure. And cucumbers and everything else in between. Yep.
All right. Oh. So we are talking to Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser from Avalo, where they deliver a box 4x6, maybe a couple, maybe three, in the front yard, the backyard, the side yard. I love that you said, Amanda, that it's wherever the lighting is good. We mean wherever the sunlight is good.
Absolutely.
I'm in the restaurant business. I'm a restaurant consultant. So when we say wherever the lighting is good, that means where I want to sit so that I will look youthful and healthy. But, you know, you want your produce to look youthful and healthy, too. Jeremy, how did you come to be planning lunch in a box?
Oh, that's honestly, it was being in Sonoma County. We found ourselves, you know, living up here in out of Hillsburg. Actually, we moved in, and we had a chance to really start gardening again. And it's something that we both had a passion for food, which led to we should grow our own food, which led to there has to be a better way to do this.
Yeah.
Really.
All right.
Is.
Well, so let's start with you since you brought it up. where did you learn to garden? Where are you from?
Well, I grew up very close, 20 miles from the geographical center of the United States. So
that's
the plains of Kansas.
I was going to say New York City, but
no, I think that's a cultural
institution. Right. That's a geocenter, right?
Exactly.
So Kansas.
Kansas, absolutely. So I grew up on wheat farms, corn farming. We had great sweet corn in the summer and amazing, amazing, you know, kind of what we think of like baked goods and a culture around, you know, everyone made their living from growing food.
You know, it's funny. I visited Northern Illinois when I was in college, and we did, I was given the experience of going out and grabbing the corn off the stalk. Yeah. And bringing it to the boiling pot inside, throwing that in for just 3 minutes. I mean, I think maybe three or four, right? And then having us all eat 3 or 4 or 5 ears of corn. Yep. If I ate 3 or 4 or 5 ears of corn that I got at the grocery store, I would die. You know what I mean? Like Joan of Arc, it would be physical torture. But if you have it when it's that fresh, it's another animal.
It's so good.
Food, actually. And what I also like about what you said, and you know, the corollary between kind of classical Middle Western farm food and California is not so great. The difference is not so great. When I was growing up, we didn't know every exotic fruit and vegetable. We knew tomatoes when it was time. We knew watermelon. We knew oranges and lemons because they grew around us. You know what I mean? We didn't know that much stuff. And because I was the child of immigrants, both my parents came to this country from someplace else. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the stuff they did, I didn't want to eat anyway because my mother cooked it until it was the color of her passport. I mean, it was just not pretty. All right. So, and we're going to get to you in a minute, Amanda. We want to know where the heck you come from because the rumor has it that you're the farmer.
All the details.
All right. But Jeremy, so you grew up in Kansas and you obviously were around food. What is that? Did your professional career take you in that direction?
Not exactly.
Okay.
No, I ended up, my family had a car business, a car dealership. And so I was in love with cars since I could remember. So I ended up going to school to learn how to design them.
You know, it's really funny. You're more Californian than I am. I mean, you know what I mean? I grew up in LA where if you didn't know every model of every single car, you know, you couldn't get a date for the prom.
I still annoy Amanda every time we see a movie. I'm pointing out the specific model years. It just drives her nuts.
You were the consultant to Marissa Tomei in that movie where she said, no, it doesn't. Anyway, never mind. So you started engineering school.
Yep, mechanical engineering, and I studied, my favorite subject was actually fluid dynamics, which I ended up doing a thesis on with some really cool people around NASCAR engines.
I love the fact that you not on purpose, you ended up building really good boxes with water flow that you knew would work because you studied it in college.
Yeah, it's funny how life works.
It is. Amanda, we're going to get to you, and I want to talk about farming. Where are you from originally?
I originally, now that's a can of worms, yeah. But I consider myself, I guess, from Forks, Washington.
You consider it,
Well, that is where I moved when I was 7 years old.
From where?
So I've spent some time in Southern California, like San Diego, and I was born actually in Illinois. But I don't know that counts because that was only 30 days. So does it count?
My father was born in Bucharest on the way out of Russia. You know, what counts is that he got here.
That's fair.
Right.
So exactly. I consider myself from Forks, Washington, and I'm proud to say that.
Yeah, no, it's really good preparation for rainy weather and for basically being a human hydroponic. When we come back, we're going to find out more about Amanda Dunker and how she carefully includes the occasional fruit with such an array of vegetables. And we're going to also talk about, and I have to talk about this, we're going to talk about the aesthetics of growing in a box in what used to be your front lawn, you know, with a sprinkler system. When we come back, right here at the table. Welcome back to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm here with Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser, and they have a wonderful new company called Avalo. Amanda, I have to tell you, I have to ask you, Avalo, where'd the word come from?
I really wish I had some like wonderful, insightful Latin word, root meaning. But actually, it's pretty silly. Jeremy and I were brainstorming, and we wanted something that would give a feeling of happiness, because we feel that hopefully the change, the movement that we'll be able to help with will give people that sense of happiness. So our favorite. Favorite fruit is actually avocado, and so we knew we had to have it in there.
See, fruit, right?
Right.
Avocado and tomatoes—the great fruits of my life. Go
that's
ahead.
That's true. So we knew we had to have avo in there somewhere.
I love that.
So we just played with it until we came up with a word that made us smile, and that's how we got Avalo.
It's when you combine a very large grapefruit, a pomelo, with an avocado, and you get an Avalo.
Absolutely. Right?
And I'm hoping for a seedless Avalo. You said something, Amanda, about how you want to help the movement. Talk about that. The movement towards...
We would really love to see more people eating, the most fresh and nutritious foods available. We'd really love the fact that, people can... have the luxury of having items delivered. However, we would also love to see that change. It's kind of a retro change, circling back to our Victory Gardens, where people are getting their food as fresh as possible, which literally means going outside and picking it. So
you're feeling that if you can bring people the boxes and help them with the growing, they'll come out and snip things, take them in and make them into dinner.
Absolutely. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, you name it.
I just love the idea. I mean, I just think that it's so straightforward. Obviously, it has to be with people of some means. How does this, before we go any further, what's the website? For goodness sakes.
Absolutely.
Do not go on radio or anywhere else without repeating the website. Put it on a post-it on your forehead. What's the website?
Our website for Avalo is www.avalo, and that's AVALOW.com.
That's pretty straightforward. I like that. Okay. So you came to gardening in a box. How?
Are you asking how we started Avalo?
No, I want to know
about life.
We know about him. Know he was trying to, get, soup up cars, and he ended up, planting things. But how did you? I mean, you're kind of more the one who's focused on the growing itself.
That's true.
What's your background?
Yep. So I am from Washington State, which is very diverse, actually. Western Washington versus Eastern Washington, night and day. You have, you know, wet and mild versus, you know, super hot and super cold. So I come from the wet and mild.
Yeah.
And wet is kind of an understatement, actually. So
I know, we were talking the other day, and I was saying that this area has such intense microclimates, and that Casadero, which is a little town in the mountains near where I live, by the Russian River, is a technical rainforest with an average of 118 inches of rain per year. And you said that ain't nothing. I mean, you said it more politely about a town near you, right?
Yep. So so I grew up in Forks, Washington, and it's about 20 miles from the Ho Rainforest, and that's HOH. Beautiful place if you ever get the chance to be out there. And that then, you know, of course, makes Forks very rainy. So we get upwards of about 160 inches of rain.
Yes. Yeah, so you're used to boots.
Well, actually, you can tell someone's a tourist if they have a umbrella and boots. So.
All right. Basically, you're walking in the woods. And so you came to growing how?
Well, I am very fortunate to be, you know, surrounded by such beautiful farms and, you know, a lot of people with green thumbs. My mother actually has a very green thumb, and she brought that in the house and out of the house. So our house always had beautiful, lush indoor plants, and she'd always try to sneak, I think, a few outdoor plants inside, and then vice versa. So she was always growing, you know, both, you know, beautiful plants to look at, but also edibles. Edibles being, you know, whether it be fruits and berries, or it would be, you know, crunchy vegetables. And so my mother has always been a big influence on that, eating healthy, eating fresh. And then my grandmother, she owned property in Squim, Washington, and that's about an hour and a half from Forks, so different climate. It's actually the lavender capital.
Oh, so we there know you about go. That here,
yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yep, definitely a beautiful place, and she had a big, beautiful greenhouse, and it was just very inspiring to always see the fact that she was so prim and proper, but she didn't mind getting her hands dirty.
You know, that's a common thing, that people who have all the pleasures of life, have all the fruits of success of their maybe forebears or maybe their own, they really do like to dig in the dirt, but they like to dig in the dirt knowing that they get to, not that they have to, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting, because as we learn to appreciate people who get to as the same as people who have to, and vice versa, as we realize that people who are with their hands in the dirt, or their hands in the pot, or, you know what I mean, or their hands at the stove, that we're all in this together, that it's very much tied together. I'm talking to Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser from Avalo, who have just started a company in the last 6 months or so that delivers raised bed boxes of vegetables and admitted fruits, right, to your home, and helps you care for them. Mm-hmm. Do you give people tips on how to harvest best? I mean, I know here in Sonoma County, we have a wonderful place called Zazu, and Dusky Estes and John Stewart are at the Barlow, which is a section of Sebastopol that, if you haven't been to, you must go to. It used to be a series of apple processing plants, and now it's a series of, I don't know, a coffee roaster with a coffee house, and spirits and winemakers and restaurants and Tibetan rug people. They floated in somehow. I don't know how that works. Artists and whatnot. And every one of the bits of dirt, every one of the kind of divider flower pots that they have around is filled to the brim with things that are native, or at least have for a long time been grown here and happen to be delicious to harvest and eat. How do you tell people how to harvest?
We do, I think, a lot of different ways. One of the things we're focused on, because we grow year-round, which I think is something that's...
Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting, because especially in Sonoma County, we're blessed with such a beautiful climate, and you can grow a lot of things year-round, but we find people tend to, in their heads, they think of gardening as a summer activity. And so it's one of the things we're trying to, I think, change and bring more kind of that constant production and to keep people in touch with seasonality, to really understand what it takes to grow something.
Yeah.
And when it grows best.
It's interesting that we keep coming back to this. You know about the Gravenstein apples, right? Our mm-hmm. famous apple. Well, it was actually bred to ripen in the summer so the whole family could help with the harvest while the kids were not in school. And then later on, Luther Burbank realized that the kids had no really good apples to take to school. So he developed the Winterstein Don't you love that? And it made it possible for us to have something a little bit less tart, a little bit more less perfect for applesauce and apple juice and cider, and more delicious for just grabbing and eating. But it's an integrated cultural experience. I mean, I love that you're doing it here. Is this something that you can do other places?
Absolutely. Our big goal.
I love that the first thing they both did is they shook their head, you know, in agreement. Yep. Yes. Go ahead.
There's no reason, no excuse, I don't want to hear it, for people not to be growing across the country. I understand that there are quote-unquote food deserts, et cetera. You know, I understand that in Washington, D.C., it can get really cold, really snowy. But I feel, you know, we feel that with, you know, technology and with open sources of communication, there's no reason not to use our research and our talents in, you know, our drive to make it so that we can be growing year-round everywhere.
So in other words, you're really developing this program here and getting good at it here with the thought of taking it across the country, where it might be a nice to joke that if it grows in Manhattan, scrape it off. You're right? You just want to throw it away, wash it down. But now they're growing all kinds of really good things on roofs in Brooklyn. And I mean, it's not just solar power, it's actually what needs to get done. And hoop houses and all kinds of greenhouses all over the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And in the South, there is a resurgence. We're going to talk about the differences in the regions and the Midwest and Washington and the flavors and what ends up, come on, folks, what ends up in your pot and pan? What do you guys cook after the harvest from the dry farm box out front or the side yard when we get back here at the table? Welcome back to At the Table. That kind of sounded more like bongos than it sounded like, you know, traditional drums. But I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm here with two wonderful people, Jeremy Nusser and Amanda Dunker. They have Avalo, and it's really named for the low fruit on an avocado tree. I just made that up. Is it? You can use that too.
I like it. I like it. Because they're the happiest fruits.
They're the happiest fruits. This is the Disney of produce, the happiest fruits in the world. We started to talk about the whole, I don't know, taking care of it all. I don't like to call it maintenance because that sounds like it's trouble. You get to fiddle with your ferns. I mean, you know, it and your food. But how do you kind of teach people the right way or the best way to take that vegetable off the vine, to take how to tell when it's ripe and how to tell how to get it inside the house?
Okay, I'll take that one. Okay, everyone's good. Looking at me over here.
Yeah,
So when it comes to harvesting, we can certainly do it ourselves and do it for the clients. However, we encourage education as much as possible. So on our website, www.avalo.com, we actually have a blog where we inform not only our clients, but also anyone out there how to learn about harvesting and how to learn how to take care of what's growing and what's in season. So we do provide tips and tricks on our website. We also have a Facebook page, so follow us on Facebook and Instagram, where we post videos. Our most recent video actually for harvesting was how to harvest broccoli.
Do you talk about the little side shoots too? Because that's what I buy at the farmer's market. I mean, I like broccoli, but the side shoots are sweeter and tender, right?
Absolutely. And what we've found is that most people don't, there's a disconnect between what you see at the grocery store or the farmer's market versus what it actually looks like when it's growing. A lot of people don't know what a cauliflower plant looks like, for instance.
Right.
So it's providing that little bit of education to help people to know if they are growing their own food, when should they pick it?
I cannot tell you the shock that I experienced when I first saw a stalk of Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my goodness. I thought they came in a round green and white waxed paper tub with plastic over the top and a rubber band, right? That's what I thought they grew like that in the back of a truck somewhere. We used to have in the grocery store I was running, it was a fancy grocery store in the 80s in San Francisco called the Oakville Grocery. There are some still around, but it was originated in the town of Oakville in the Napa Valley across from the Mondavi Winery. Yeah. It is the oldest single ongoing grocery in America, 1831. Unbelievable. Anyway, so we're doing all these things and we're trying to collect all these things to be the great pantry of the San Francisco brilliant cooking, you know, crew. And The produce guy brings me and he says, so should I buy a bunch of these? And I said, sure, what are they? Are they green vegetable batons? I mean, what the heck? You know what I mean? Yeah. Brussels sprouts are one of my favorite things. And broccoli, I always love. I have to admit that times that have been difficult for me in life, I find that I want to eat broccoli. I don't know. It's apparently very good for your heart. But it's been my natural inclination when I'm really blue or very upset. I don't know. Maybe we should do a survey. How many people eat broccoli? Never mind. I don't think anybody in the Bush family is going to respond to this at all.
Well, it's actually, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things that as we're continuing to take kind of a scientific approach to gardening is looking at the nutritional value. And broccoli is just packed full of antioxidants and vitamins and trace minerals that I don't think really are accounted for in a lot of different ways. So it might even be your body telling you what you need to some degree.
You know, my body's been bossing me around for years. I mean, and actually, I think that's the key to a good life, right? Is to lean into nature. And that is to say, to kind of listen to your body, to see what it is that you seem to want. Sometimes I'll have had kind of more salt in the day than I want, and I will just want to drink water. And I've learned that that's good. You know what I mean? That's good. Now, mind you, if that stimulation is done artificially, if I've been given all kinds of salts and all kinds of processed foods, you know, I know I'm going to be depressed tomorrow anyway. I'm going to be bloated. But you really can get in touch with your produce if you bring it to the front door. I have this image of you guys kind of like Santa, you know. But although, you know, you have to be careful in zucchini season. People will throw rocks at you. You know what I mean? If you leave them too many zucchini, it could be trouble. Have there been some things that you've planted and found to be popular that you didn't expect? I realize that the company is kind of young. You know what I mean? But different kinds of greens, different leaves.
I think the one thing I think was interesting to us was cherry tomatoes.
Okay.
Because everyone loves cherry tomatoes. You can't go wrong with that.
Right.
But having a really productive cherry tomato plant
is really frightening.
It's,
it's kind of scary. It's like pod people.
It is. So we've had people actually complain that, like, please, if you could just, you know, donate this basket for us, because, like, you know, this is 2 more pounds than we can possibly fit into our mouths.
I will never forget having a friend's daughter cry at her birthday party, too many presents. And I think to myself, it's not possible to say too many tomatoes. What you need to do is teach these people how to make sauce, right?
That's true.
I mean, somebody get these people a pot and a heat source and some glass jars.
Well, that's a good point, because we've had clients experience a plethora of vegetables and they've had, you know, quote unquote, too many of them. It's actually inspired them to, I mean, not only, of course, take our advice, hopefully, fingers crossed, but also to do the research. They're actually taking the time now to find recipes to accommodate these things. There's less food waste because they've been watching it grow. They're so excited.
Yeah.
They want to use every piece of it.
Well, what about the composting of the extra? I mean, in the leaves and the stalks and all that stuff. Can they put that in a compost box at the side and either add it to their other property or to their box or give it back to you? I mean, there's a group in New York City of very high-end restaurants. And what they are doing is taking their vegetable scraps from their restaurant, sending them to a farm in Pennsylvania where they are fed to chickens that are then harvested and brought back to that restaurant. I'm exhausted. The bus fare alone for that chicken is serious. But seriously, are you looking at ways of not only encouraging, because I think you're clearly doing that, encouraging the cycle, but adding to your part of it?
Absolutely. One of the things we do is when we're doing maintenance, we try to keep the gardens looking as aesthetically pleasing.
So, I was going to ask you about that. You like them to look nice too, right?
You should. I mean, there's no reason not to, especially I think if you have someone who is focused on it, it becomes something that's easy to do on a regular basis as opposed to once a week going out and then fighting for an hour, you know, spending
and,
a
And
a
I have
minutes.
To tell you, you know, if you take a look at a mowed lawn and you take a look at a meadow, there's no comparison. Meadows are more beautiful. That's just all there is to it. So, and nature knows what to do. Nature knows that it's a little wetter there, so there's going to be like this, and it's a little drier there, and it's going to be like that. And if you are sensitive to the way the box works and where it goes in on the property, you can have those kind of aesthetic, but they're not regiment. They're not little soldiers of produce.
Definitely
right?
Not.
Getting ready to going to the slaughter.
You do have to listen to kind of what's growing and how it's growing and just kind of encourage it. So it is organized chaos, I think, to kind of what you were saying. But we do. So the scraps we actually take away, And our plans are to actually start incorporating that into our own compost. And
all right, well, we're not going to be renting out any sheep to eat the extra grass or produce growing in these boxes, because it's going to go back into the compost and then back to you into yet another box, possibly on the upper floor of your palatial townhouse in the woods. All right, this is Clark Wolf, and I'm at the table with two really wonderful people who are making food possible for you at home. Join us in a moment at the table. Welcome back to At the Table. I'm with Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser. They have a restaurant. No, they don't. They have a business. They have a food source. I'm just going to call it a food source, called Avalo. And that's where people can subscribe to get a box or two or three or more, which is 4x6 filled with well-chosen dirt, right? And its own kind of hydration system that's built right in. They'll plant for you. They'll help you. They'll teach you to harvest, or they'll harvest it for you. They'll pick your weeds and sell them to somebody else's arugula. You know what I mean? You never know what's going to happen. I mean, have you had some of that where people said, "What's that doing there?" And you'll say, "That's the food."
We have people that have a lot of preconceived notions about what they like and don't like.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think we've been really successful with is convincing people just to grow one plant of the thing that they don't like, to see if they don't like it when it's really fresh.
Yeah.
Because the taste can be completely different.
Because if you've ever had an old fava bean, you would be miserable. You know, lima beans are us. But if you've ever had a fresh fava, oh my goodness, there's just nothing like it. So what have been the problem children of the boxed produce set?
Ooh, the problem children. That's a very good question. I think we've struggled a little bit, not so much this season, but last year before we started our business, because of the weather, we struggled with the brassica family. So the Brussels sprouts and the broccoli, et cetera. Because we couldn't get things to grow properly. It was too warm. It was too this. It was too that. And so they just didn't set the way we were anticipating them to set and grow. And so they were really finicky last year.
All right, tell us about set and grow.
Absolutely. So those are my words. I don't know that they're technical terms.
Well, they're usually used in terms of the grapevines. So we know about that here. So tell us.
Okay. So when I mean set and grow, is that the plant would grow up and it would be, you know, this lush, beautiful green plant, and then it wouldn't actually turn into anything. It wouldn't, you know, start to sprout that beautiful head of broccoli, and it would just be so sad. Or it would start to bolt, you know, it'd start to flower right when we thought it was actually going to start to grow that head, and then we spent all this time and energy and love staring at this plant, and then it just, nothing would happen.
All right, bolt is a wonderful word. And apparently the essence of the plant left.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, get me out of here, right? Yeah. But now, aren't a lot of those flowers very edible? Or, I mean, are the flowers that grow on bolting plants, like when basil starts to flower, you know that it's going to flower, shoot its wad, as we like to say, and die, right? It's going to fall over. But are those flowers edible?
A lot of the time, yeah, absolutely. I think that's the one thing that with the concept of food waste, you know, it's like the parts of a plant that are actually edible and delicious are not restricted to the fruit.
Is that the truth. I mean, I wish, again, there's another T-shirt you can sell.
Yeah.
You know, eat the whole plant.
Eat the whole plant.
So often, again, I will, my favorite farmer ever is a woman who passed away a couple years ago called Nancy Skoll from Middleton Farms. And she used to say to me, anytime I bought anything, she would instruct me, eat the leaves, you know, they're the best part, or whatever it was. You know what I mean? She taught me. And she would have pencil thin asparagus, and she would say, you know, Sam picked them several hours ago, eat one now, you know, and it was like a candy cane. It was like asparagus sugar. You know what I mean? You don't have this experience any other way.
No.
Are there some critters that you plant each time, or are some of them the kinds of plants that come back every year and you have to either take out the dirt or just, you know, kind of duck and let them come up?
Well, it's a mixed bag. We do want to keep things as natural as possible, but we do have to keep in mind crop rotation. We want to make sure that the plants are healthy. We want to avoid any kind of fungus or, you know, problems happening from one season to the next. But in general, we do leave the whole plant. The exception may be the nightshade family. We do remove the tomato plant. We do try to remove the roots of the tomato plant just to make it so that the dirt isn't contaminated. But right. In general, the rest of the world of plants, we tend to leave them alone. We might chop them at the base.
Yeah.
And I mean, even then, once you've chopped them at the base, what you're pulling out can then be composted and put back in.
Right. So it I mean, and in a sense, you're just doing what the earth would do anyway. Yeah. It would fall over. It would decompose, which is such a nice word compared to rot. Speaking of which, how does this all fit into? I mean, are you vegetarians or vegans or anything?
No, I think we're very much opportunists.
So basically, what you do is you take care of the plants and then you go to In-N-Out Burger.
No, not quite.
Okay, all right. I struck a nerve. Okay, no French fries around here. No. Yeah. Well, so what? But how do animals fit into? How does other protein fit into this mix?
Well, I think one of the things that we've shifted our own diets on is that we actually look at the vegetables as the star.
Yeah.
And then meat is the secondary element to it,
yeah.
To the meal. And so that kind of changed it but from a flavor standpoint, because a lot of times the in-season vegetables are generally more flavorful.
More diverse, more flavorful, more delicious, more healthful, more diverse, more affordable. Did I say diverse? Yeah, I did. Twice? Okay. One more time. More diverse, folks. The fact is that when you eat animal protein, you're just eating the thing that ate the produce. So why not eat the produce once in a while? I mean, not all the time. Sometimes the meat can be very pleasing. And if chickens have been pecking, you know, they deserve to have their little necks wrung. Oh, sorry. I'm going to get phone calls. Forgive me, chicken lovers everywhere. And I love eggs. Eggs. Actually, there is nothing like a plate of vegetables, fresh, some of them blanched, some of the ripe avocado, too many cherry tomatoes, and just one fried egg on top or poached egg on top that gives you that other unctuous protein. Yeah. That brings it all together and makes you goofy, right?
Absolutely.
You know, we're talking to the two from Avalo. Really quickly, website, fast.
www.avalo.com. That's AVALOW.com.
All right. And when we come back, we're going to talk about guilty pleasures from planting folk at the table. We're back at the table for the last few minutes with Amanda Dunker and Jeremy Nusser of Avalo, and we're going to talk about guilty pleasures. Mm-hmm. Well, so when you go to Avalo, before you get to the guilty pleasures, how do you go through the website?
Sure. So the website's avalo.com, A-V-A-L-O-W. There's a lot of things I think you can look for. A lot of the frequent content is on our blog. And you can look for pricing information. You can find out what we're growing and also more information about the technologies that we're using.
Okay, folks, you can tell what background he's got. He said content. It's not content. It's information. It's stories. It's recipes. It's stuff, right? And Amanda, guilty pleasures for eating from the woman who farms so well?
Guilty pleasures. All right, Mom, turn off the radio. Guilty pleasure, definitely. I'm a fan of graham crackers. And I don't mean fancy graham crackers. No. I mean from the grocery store graham crackers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Out of the box.
Yeah.
With pre-made... Okay, everyone's cringing. Pre-made frosting in between the graham crackers as a sandwich. It's such guilty. It's one of those things where I get a craving every 6 months or so, and I'll buy the ingredients. I'll bring them home, and I hope nobody else notices. I hope nobody sees this. I'll make my sandwich, which is like 99% frosting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I push it together, squish it, you know, the frosting out. And I lick the sides. It's gross. It's terrible. And then I eat it, and then I feel so guilty that I throw away the entire package of frosting.
No. Compost it. You have no idea. Folks, you can't tell because you're not in the studio with us how fit and healthy these two people are. This is the antithesis of s'mores. This is SLES.
Oh, it's right? So
this
bad.
This is you could not do it around a campfire because you'd all melt.
But I know that if I compost my you know rest of the frosting, I won't go back to retrieve it because I won't do.
Yeah, what I really want to know is what color frosting. No, I don't want to know what color frosting.
It has to be chocolate.
See, there you go. All right. Okay. So it's a food group. I mean, you know, right? Jeremy, guilty pleasure quickly.
Well, mine's a little bit healthier.
That would be easy. Oh my God. Nails are healthier than what she has in the middle of the night, you know, when things are.
This is my current one. This is a new obsession, which is trying to find what I can sneak beet greens into so that Amanda doesn't notice.
Oh, all right. So
it's
the beet green torture. Yeah. And by the way, if that chocolate icing looks a little bit green, it's not algae.
I like beet green.
They're very good.
They're really good.
What he's not telling you is his fascination with peanut butter. That's what he's not telling you.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? I would eat peanut butter out of the jar 24/7 if it wouldn't make me really uncomfortable and sticky. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, folks, look into this because Avalo is, I think, a bit of a force to be reckoned with. I think they're going to be doing some things that are really wonderful. Your attitude and your approach seems really healthy and lively and fun and grounded, and it looks like and it sounds like and it reads like you've done some homework and you're continuing to learn. What I love is you have something that you're offering that you grew up loving, that you've learned about how to offer to other people, and that you continue to utilize to learn for yourselves and for others. So thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks for being at the table.